right. Very good morning and welcome to another beautiful segment of the Early Morning Scoop, wherever you're tuning in from. Thank you so much for always choosing us and keeping yourself informed during this period of time. Thank you so much. And I'm your host, Loisa Shimi, and together we'll dive into the important discussion as usual on on economic affairs, talking about the trade policy, entrepreneurship until the hour of 7:30. But before we dive into the latest economic update from across Africa, of course, please be sure to connect with us on our social media platforms. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Eagle FM Namibia, as well as on the Village newspaper page or pages on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. That's what you can follow us, please, on. And do not also forget to subscribe on WhatsApp channel. That is Eagle FM Media House, just for the daily catch up of the newspaper, or rather the newspaper alerts, and of course the daily news update. And stay informed also on the go by downloading the Eagle FM app, a very important app that you need to have. Beloved, available on both Google Play and, of course, the App Store. And do not, again, forget to download the Eba app that is, again, available on Google Play Store and App Store. Now, to start off internationally, is that the upcoming Youth Energy Summit will spotlight the critical role of young entrepreneurs in tackling South Africa's energy and employment challenges. And the forum will unpack youth participation in energy reform with discussion on private sector involvement, skills development, bursaries, and of course strategic partnerships. Now you might take a listen to this particular update.
For your time, first talk us through the element of tackling unemployment and the inclusion of South African youth in energy reforms.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks a lot. Really a pleasure to be with you today. Youth involvement in the energy sector is critical, not only for our economic growth, but also to make sure that we can actually expand the sector. And so some of the things that we've been talking about as a business, as well as the renewable energy sector as a whole, is how do we integrate young people into the space? Yes, it's new and growing for us as an economy, but certainly it's considering how do we get young people educated? What are the degrees, diplomas, qualifications, vocational skills that are required in order for them to enter into the space? And then when they are in the space, where are the opportunities in terms of disciplines? Be it legal, regulatory, construction engineering, procurement, and all of these other things. So it is very topical and quite timely for us.
So an opportune time. And to what extent then will the summit produce the deliberations that translate into the tangibility where implementation is concerned?
Yeah, I think in terms of tangible and practical outcomes, some of the things that we're discussing is case studies, successes that we've achieved in the last 10 to 15 years as IPPs in South Africa. For example, at Mulilo, we have successfully launched the Danish vocational program, where we're taking 30 matriculants from the Northern Cape in partnership with the Danish embassy and the community trusts that are based in the R and and so on. And we've really created a program for young people to go to Denmark and gain vocational skills. So one track will develop wind turbine technicians. The other track is going to develop agricultural experts. So they will spend approximately 18 months overseas, and then they will stay on for a paid internship program. And our expectation is when they come back into the South African economy, then we will be able to place them in certain areas within the broader economy, but more specifically in the renewable energy sector. So those are some of the practical case studies that we hope that we can discuss and inspire others in the industry to join along with us on this exciting journey.
That's a wonderful initiative, and it brings me to my question about Mulilo's role in the context of the private sector involvement, but broader than the private and state participation, as well as a holding of each other's hands to ensure that there's progress and an accelerated level of progress here.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think as IPPs, we've certainly gained some sophistication and competency over the last decade or so. What we're seeing as a trend in the industry is more and more private sector projects, more and more private sector offtaker. And so it really creates an opportunity, not just for, you know, an IPP such as ourselves to partner with the government, but it also creates an opportunity for an IPP and a mining offtaker, as an example, or an industrial offtaker of power to say, well, you've got your own, let's say, corporate social investment program. We have a social impact ambition as a business. How do we then collaborate together to make sure that we can invest in skills development, in education?
All right, there you had it. And of course, just on that again, Minister of Electricity and Energy, Ramaphosa, says Africa must reject the notion of decarbonization and the expense of development. Now, Ramaphosa was delivering the welcoming address at the 4-day Africa Energy Forum, which is now being held in Cape Town. Now, the forum is a platform to discuss and implement innovative solutions for Africans' energy challenges, promoting environmental stewardship and, of course, social equity. We might take a lesson.
The fact that 600 million Africans don't have access to electricity is shocking, but it has very little to do with the transition. The transition is all about moving those who do have electricity from electricity generated by primarily fossil fuels to energy generated by primarily renewable energy fuels. Now, if you don't have electricity to start with, then there's no transition. Transition means moving from one thing to another. So basically, the move to renewable energy holds out great hope for Africa. Having gone through the last century and 2 decades with plenty of access to fossil fuel types in Africa, oil in Nigeria, Angola, coal in Botswana, South Africa, there's no reason why Africa should have been left behind on energy, except as pointed out, through a lack of will. But to link this to the transition and blame it on the transition, in my opinion, is disingenuous. Mm. There's not a transition of those 600 million. There's an opportunity for them to have electricity for the first time. And that opportunity is a little bit like cell phone technology, where we can leapfrog the need to put long transmission lines all over Africa and run coal and gas and oil in order to supply people. We can supply at the local level on microgrids on a town and city basis. And that's the great hope. And that's what we need to be accelerating in. And in fact, that's what a lot of the countries in the global south are accelerating in. We've just been sidetracked by insisting that we be allowed to make use of fossil assets that we've got and that we haven't made use of for the last, 120 years for whatever reason.
Right, right. But then, Mr. Mullinson, do you believe this stance sort of reflects the broader sentiment amongst African energy policymakers, or is it a more, I would say, controversial position?
Well, I think blaming it on the transition is incorrect. We need to basically be really thankful that we're at a time in history where the transition is taking place. And in a sense, Africa can move from not having electricity supplied to those great number of people to doing it with electricity generated at source, so that we don't have to see transmission lines across the Great Savannah, the Serengeti, the plains of Tanzania. It would be brilliant to be able to generate electricity at source. And then, of course, in areas where there may be the need for industrialization, you can also do it with renewables, because these days storage is very cost competitive. And, of course, Africa has a lot of hydro power. It has a lot of geothermal power. We seem to spend more time fighting with each other than we do on building stuff in many parts of Africa, I'm afraid to say.
Right. And having said that then, how should we, and by we I'm saying Africa, how should Africa then balance the urgent need for industrialization and economic growth with its climate commitments under the global frameworks like the Paris Agreement, for instance?
Well, it said in one of those statements, it said that we should do it with a modicum of social justice and environmental stewardship. My vision, and I'll focus on South Africa for the moment, is that a renewable fleet in South Africa by 2040 would cost the country approximately 250 billion rand less per year than what we currently have in our so-called integrated resource plan that has a lot of gas and nuclear in the build. So that's a starting point, 240 billion per year. But the real way to bring about transformation as we go through this technological transition is to find ways, and there are ways, of actually empowering the people to actually own that new fleet. So I think it's very important to have distributed, widespread ownership of the new renewable energy fleet across Africa. So not just to be recipients of electricity, but actually to be owners of the fleets that are providing that electricity. And in that context, if the West are prepared to give us a combination of grants and highly concessional loans in order to achieve that, then what a pleasure, because we shouldn't see this as a cost, but as an investment opportunity where the impact that electricity can have as being the very lifeblood of.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
All right, to move on to the Zambia, to Zambia, is that the government has emphasized that investing in mining technology and, of course, supporting innovative solution is essential to placing Africa at the center of global mining solution. Now, technology and science minister says this is why collaboration between the government and the private sector is a key to unlocking opportunities and, of course, positioning Africa as a leader in sustainable mining. We might take a listen to this subject.
Has continued to come up with digital solutions that have potential to transform the mining sector and increase productivity. Government, in partnership with the United Nations Development Programme, UNDP, has selected 10 innovators from across the African continent to share their solutions in the mining sector.
Exposed to the space of artisanal and small-scale gold mining, and I got exposed to the dangers that the sector possessed. And so that's how I came up with a biotech biodegradable gloves and retort system, which is basically an integrated system comprising of protective gears and a recycling system for mercury in the.
Technology and Science Minister Felix Mutati says with such investment in mining technology, Africa can find its own solutions.
We want to make it happen, not only for Zambia, but for Africa. We want a mindset change that for once believe in African talent. And we have seen evidence today.
The Ministry of Mines is confident that with the right technology, the country can increase mining production.
It comes at the time the African continent is seeking to unlock its mineral wealth not only by machinery and capital, but by the innovation of our youth.
And Tumbuktu Foundation Investment Officer Sinazo CVC explains the benefits of using technology in mining operations.
You are not just engineers of technology, you are architects of impact. You are building solutions that are revenue generating.
Meanwhile, UNDP Program Regional Service Center for Africa Director, Mathis Nab, is calling for more research to unlock investments.
Mining today is at the forefront of technological transformation. We are entering an era where data, robotics, artificial intelligence, and sustainable practices are not just buzzwords, but essential tools for progress.
At the National Institute for Scientific and Industrial Research, Chief Executive Officer Henry Gambafuile says the Institute will continue to nurture innovation.
Innovation does not only belong to Silicon Valley.
Right, their time is 18 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock. This early morning scoop. Now to move on to the next item is that the South Africa's Deputy President Paulo Mashatile is in Russia right now to boost trade ties and, of course, promote the countries as an investment destination. Listen.
Ties and promote the country as an investment destination. During his working visit, he'll be rubbing elbows with global business leaders at the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. Desha Chenishova has more from Moscow.
The goal of the visit is to strengthen bilateral economic and trade ties between South Africa and Russia, with a big focus on the agriculture, automotive, energy and mining industries, as well as science and technology cooperation. Trade turnover has been steadily growing between the countries and exceeded $1.2 billion last year, with almost a half of that coming from the agriculture industry. Moscow has been expanding its ties with its non-Western partners, and South Africa is interested in exporting more to Russia. Mashatile will visit two Russian cities, Moscow and St. Petersburg, to attend high-level engagements as well as economic diplomacy activities. In Moscow, Mashatile is due to meet with Russian Prime Minister Mikhail Mishustin, and in St. Petersburg, he will attend the annual St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. Mashatile is expected to participate in the forum's key event, the plenary session, along with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Mashatile has also been invited to participate as a speaker in the Russian-African Business Dialogue. This year, International Economic Forum is held under the theme of Shared Values, the Foundation of Growth in a Multipolar World. On the sidelines of the forum, Deputy President is scheduled to deliver a public lecture at the St. Petersburg State University called South Africa's G20 Presidency in a Rapidly Changing Geopolitical Environment. The St. Petersburg leg of the visit is expected to leverage on promoting South Africa's trade relations and South.
All right, there you had it. Now, to move on to the next item is that the transport infrastructure investment has emerged as a strategic lever to drive economic growth at the Transport Evolution Africa Forum and Expo.
D has been flagged as an important area of investment at the Transport Evolution Africa Expo. CEO of the Road Freight Association, Gavin Kelly, says that while South Africa has some of the most strategically positioned ports globally, their competitiveness has been undermined by years of stagnation, in part due to outdated technology.
There seems to be a fair amount of damage done to a lot of that old equipment, so that needs to be changed. Secondly, it's understanding that we're playing against the world. We're no longer playing just against Maputo to the right of us and Kampala to the north of us and Walvis Bay to the left of us.
Kelly says with the recent guarantee granted to Transnet from government, it is important for infrastructure to be safeguarded. These routes are vital for industrial nodes like the Tshwane Automotive Special Economic Zone, which connects manufacturers to global markets. CEO Dr. Bega Zulu says they are projecting a 1.1 billion rand spend on SMMEs as they move into the second phase of their work.
But over and above that, the progress towards our construction for phase two also involves a lot of black industrialists. And for us, this is an important milestone because for the first time, we want to showcase our commitment towards empowerment and being inclusive. And part of the black industrialists will be looking at the new energies, the new solutions around manufacturing of buses and tires and other EV-related components.
With Africa's transport industry projected to grow by 6 to 8% annually from 2025 to 2040, private investment through public-private partnerships is seen as key to closing the infrastructure funding gap.
All right, there you have it. The time is 23 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is early morning. Skip now to move on to Sierra Leone. Is that Sierra Leone is among seven countries hit with a partial U.S. visa ban as of early June. Now, this restriction on student exchange visas have particularly hit young citizens hard. We might take a listen.
Thomas has been planning for a journey that could change his life. He wants to study in the U.S., but a U.S. partial ban on Sierra Leone could hinder that dream.
As a student and somebody that loves America, it saddens my heart to know that the U.S. government has put a partial ban on students because as somebody that would love to further his education, I believe that America is a great opportunity for me because it's the land of opportunities. And I would love to go there to study, to further my education. And with this partial ban, I don't know if it's going to be possible anymore. So I ask that the U.S. government and the U.S. president rethink, and hopefully they can lift the ban.
Sierra Leone is in a category of seven countries facing the partial ban, including Burundi, Cuba, Laos, Togo, Turkmenistan, and Venezuela.
The U.S. says that the visa halt is in response to Sierra Leone's refusal to accept deportees and high visa overstay numbers. But those that are paying the price are not the ones who overstayed.
The visa restrictions will block access to immigrant visas and key non-immigrant categories including B1, B2, tourism and business, FM and J student and exchange visas.
The student exchange is probably by far the hardest hit, and I feel sorry for that. And sitting out here, I'm a beneficiary. I was lucky enough to go to the United States to further my education. And it's not only gave me world-class education, just like my other brothers and sisters or other young men and women hoping to go there, but it gave me access to other cultures around the world. As America is a melting pot. You meet people from all over the world.
Hussein continues to look for more opportunities to fulfill his dreams.
Well, I just want to say to every student out there and somebody that, and anybody that has a dream, do not give up on your dream, because this ban does not determine whether you're going to be successful or not. You can always become successful, so just keep up the good work, stay focused, and put in the effort. It will work out.
Experts believe that the ban will be lifted sooner rather than later.
Right now, we are all scratching our heads right now. We don't know what the next step is, but we will continue to talk. I trust we have very smart people in the State House. We have very smart people in our embassy in the United States. They will talk to the local embassy here, and they will together talk to the State Department to see how we can resolve this issue as quickly as possible.
Professor.
All right. Now to move on to Limpopo is that some self-employed young people in Limpopo are urging their peers to use the little resources they have to create jobs for themselves. Now, as the province continues to grapple with the soaring level of unemployment, many young people are creating jobs through entrepreneurship and informal business ventures.
From Maungani village near Toyandou, following a protracted job hunt that bore no fruit, Ramabrana started her own carpentry company to make ends meet. Ramabrana is now a well-known carpenter around Bembe district. She has honed her skills in areas such as ceiling fitting, roofing and cabinet making.
I went for my practicals. And I realized that this thing is easy, so I can start my own company. I did focus on finding a job, but unfortunately I wasn't getting anything. And I end up opening my company, which is one step at a time, basically. Because there are challenges there and there, but we do manage.
Ramabrana has issued a word of encouragement to young people who are disgruntled with the saturated job market.
It's not easy to start your own thing, but once you started, you take one step at a time. Well, the first step is going to be hard, but the second step will come once you started.
With an acute lack of jobs and high levels of unemployment in Limpopo, some young people are now pouring themselves into farming as an alternative lifeline. Matume Mukhobu from Gemarke village outside Snoverwana is a commercial vegetable farmer after studying horticulture in Gauteng and an unsuccessful job hunting process. A despondent Mukhobu cut the wild goose chase and headed home. However, an unused 29-hectare piece of land belonging to her parents will become an economic recourse for the 32-year-old. Mukhobu sells her produce to individual users and major supermarkets in the Blaauwberg area.
I learned how to take care of crops at home. So after matric, I went to Gauteng and I studied ornamental horticulture at UNISA. So, but then I was also doing internships, learning how to take care of crops, how to plant, how to take care of a nursery. But then I realized I can go back home and do this thing because already at home they have land and they have a borehole. So that motivated me a lot to come back home. So I quit my internship and I came back home.
Mukhobu has urged young job hunters to maximize the potential of communal lands to create jobs.
Message for the young people who are sitting at home or are in Gauteng searching for employment, especially those who are in agriculture. I would like to tell them they must go back home and develop their communal land. There's a lot of land lying fallow in communal land, in communities, rural areas that needs to be worked. So we can't afford a commercial farm since we are all first-generation farmers.
Mukhobu Farming Initiative has provided jobs for young people in the area.
To be working here, we can at least afford to buy some kids some clothes and maintain some societies, and even we can afford to pay them the trips at school.
Being here, it's very important because
at my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low, because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly.
All right, the time is 30 minutes in the half 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. So now, just lastly on the international segment, is that in Zambia, government has established 6 oxygen plants in various hospitals across the country at a cost of over $10 million. We might take a listen.
And the medical oxygen plant at Kabwe Central Hospital, with a capacity of 120 by 50 liters of oxygen cylinders per day.
For many years, Zambia has been experiencing challenges in the supply of medical oxygen to our health facilities. To this effect, my ministry sought to support install 6 oxygen plants at the National Heart Hospital in Lusaka, Karinda Waro General Hospital in Betawuke, Chinsali General Hospital, St. Paul's Mission Hospital in Chelenge. Total cost of establishing these 6 oxygen plants amounts to 10.5 million dollars. Each plant comes with a delivery truck, backup generators, and boosters.
And Lewis is United Nations Office for Project Services Head of Programs.
So in terms of our particular story, this is the third commissioning of an oxygen plant supported by the Global Fund and implemented by UNAPS.
Central Province Medical Director Elijah Mtoloki says the plant will cut a lot of costs for the facility.
Guest of honor, before now, Kabwe Central Hospital, like other district hospitals in the province, were procuring oxygen at 500 per cylinder. Kabwe Central Hospital alone has been using an average of 20 cylinders per day, giving a total daily cost of approximately 10,000 and 150,000 monthly costs on oxygen alone. Guest of Honor, this has been a huge cost for the hospital, and the construction of this oxygen plant will reduce expenditure on oxygen procurement and enhance quality service delivery.
The district is also happy with advancements made using CDF in the health sector.
Because just the
All right, there you have it. The time is 33 minutes in the after 6 o'clock, and this early morning scoop. We can go into a very short commercial break. Then once we return, we'll take you through the local news update. Do not go away.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those
of Anangeshefa ya Namibia, ombito mbwa na wa oronjika. Zeitha nina omayaguro ni randitoma yoe, yongeshefa yoe kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uka kombanga nina. Kara omkwashifareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengira seoma, konora heta tuimwe. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oniaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook.
All right, the time is 35 minutes in the off 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Welcome back, and if you just joined us right now, thank you so much and a very good morning to you. And if you started with us at 6, please thank you so much for staying tuned. And to start off with our local news, we're going to start with one of our lead story of today. I'm not going to read the whole story, but I would also want you to subscribe, or rather go follow it up on our on our channel, or perhaps you can just send through your details to 081-241-44. That's the number you can save, please, so that you can request for the newspaper, and then you can be getting it every day. The newspaper is released, that is Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And or rather, just subscribe to our WhatsApp channel, that is Eagle FM Media House, and then you can be getting the newspaper. So now, to start off, is that the Zimbabwe is Africa's top lithium producer with 2.4 million tons of concentrate in 2024. Now, the SADC nations plans to stop exporting a lithium concentrate from January 2024. Now, the goal of this move is to develop a local pressing industry that can create more local value from the mineral. Now, Mining Minister Wilson Chitando announced the decision last week, Tuesday. Now, he said the move aligns with ongoing lithium sulfate plant project, particularly those led by Chinese companies. Now, the lithium sulfate is made by refining lithium concentrate, and it's also used to produce higher value battery grade chemicals like lithium carbonate and lithium hydroxide. Now, Chitando said that with progressing capacity being added, Zimbabwe will no longer allow export of unprocessed concentrate starting in 2027. So please, beloved, do read the full story on our channel, that is Eagle FM Media House channel. Then, of course, you can able to get the whole story, or rather, do subscribe to the or rather to ask for the newspaper that you can send through your details to 081-241-44. And to move on to the next item is that the Bank of Namibia, some more monetary policy committee, has maintained the repo rate at 6.75 since 15 April 2025. However, today, the Bank of Namibia will announce the new repo rate. Now, we will now be joined by economists who will also share their prediction, whereas economic analysts predict that the Bank of Namibia, that is Bond Monetary Policy Committee, will keep its repo rate stable at 6.75% on today, actually. So now we might take a lesson, whereas my colleague, Patemoshala Lukolo, brought us this particular update, and of course engage economist Joseph Kifat Shehama. You might take a lesson. Morning, Mr. Joseph.
Morning, Fatima.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mr. Joseph, when we are speaking of the Bank of Namibia reporting on its repo rate, can you maybe just elaborate for us what this repo rate means?
Okay. So, in actual fact, is that when you talk about repo rate, so you talk about the rate at which Bank of Namibia charge the commercial banks. Let me make it straightforward. It's like if commercial bank want money from Bank of Namibia, mm-hmm. so then obvious they will pay that rate, and that is what we call repo rate. If you want to borrow money from the bank, commercial banks, so then obvious it will call interest rate. So in a straight way is that the repo rate is a rate where the Bank of Namibia or the commercial bank or the central bank lend money to the commercial banks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In your own perspective, or in your own words, has this repo rate? How do you see, or in your own view, what do you expect the repo rate announcement to be?
The best thing that what I'm thinking from the point of view or what I'm thinking now, mm-hmm. Is that the Bank of Namibia is likely to keep the repo rate unchanged, mm-hmm. and I understand that there are some of room that many people feel that the repo rate was supposed to reduce, but currently my own view is that the repo rate is going to remain the same, that is going to stay at 6.7%, and also if you look at our inflation, for instance, we have also seen that the inflation has started to decline, and looking at, for instance, in April it was 3.5%, mm-hmm. so I mean 3.6%, but now it cool off or moderate at 3.5% in May, and that it gives us Bank of Namibia opportunity not to increase it or to reduce it, just to remain flat as it is currently.
Okay. However, what are the factors within our economy that are likely to influence this decision?
When you talk about the Bank of Namibia monetary policy, we look at variables. Mm-hmm. So we look at, for instance, the inflation. So, as I said previously, the inflation declined from 3.6 to 3.5 in May, and the reason was that there was a decline in the transportation costs, and the decline in transportation costs, it means that especially when we have seen that the fuel was up and down. Mm-hmm. Despite that, the market was very fragile. And also the other thing, you look at the foreign exchange reserve, mm-hmm. Or what you call it, the international reserve. Mm-hmm. When I listened to the last time and look at the current international stock, it's actually standing at plus minus over 60 billion, which is actually equivalent plus 3 to 4 months, if Namibia wants maybe to buy things or to cover the import. That is some of the key elements where someone if which actually determine or influence the repo rate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This repo rate has been going up and down for several times. As an economic analyst, this repo rate have been going down for a consecutive time now. How have this decision impacted the economy, or how will it affect the economy maybe tomorrow or the years to come?
Okay. When you have the when you have the repo rate that is consistently declining, mm-hmm. especially like in this case, mm-hmm. so this actually tell you that okay, money become cheaper. So mm-hmm. and when money become cheaper, then obvious people they will be able to borrow money. Mm-hmm. And also the other reason is that we look at credit extension, for instance. Mm-hmm. We look at and sometimes when the Bank of Namibia wants the corporate to borrow money for expansion and so on, then obviously the Bank of Namibia will influence the repo rate so that it can start to work and reduce the repo rate so it can be affordable. And also the same apply. If the repo rate increase, mm-hmm. then obviously it will also affect your pocket. So in terms of mortgage bond, for instance, a home loan, mm-hmm. And if you have a home loan of, let me say, of 1.5 billion and the repo rate increase, for instance, it means that you will add up. It is a top up of 450 per month. Mm-hmm. But if it decline, the same apply, meaning that you will also save. But also on the other hand is that the decline in the repo rate is also fine. Mm-hmm. But also we need to understand that in this case, there is what we call it 0.75 basis point between Namibia and South Africa. Mm-hmm. And also,
there's no price like the ShopRite price. We commit to bring you lower prices on all the essentials you need. Like 1 liter Rite brand Long Life Full Cream Milk for only $21.99. And 1.5 kg Real Good Frozen Mixed Chicken Portions for only $79.99. Never pay more than the ShopRite price. Valid until 22 June 2025. Only at ShopRite.
Great news. Import just got even.
We need to be very cautious when it comes to the investors. Some of the investors might actually take their investment to South Africa because there is a better return. So, that is actually the relationship between repo rate and the economy.
Okay. You are an economist, and I believe you can tell us better. As an individual, what time is it good for me to take loans? For me, maybe to be able to buy a house or a car. What? How will I know this is the good time?
It's a good time, mm-hmm. because when the repo rate start to decline, it's a good time. And for you to buy. But however, mm-hmm. When the repo rate is constant, unchanged,
mm-hmm.
so that is the market is fragile because it's just between. So for instance, looking at the geopolitics, for instance, now looking at the war that have just happened now with Israel and Iran,
mm-hmm.
so that will actually also influence our repo rate going forward if the war continue to carry on.
Mm-hmm.
So but when we see this, if there's the escalations in war. So then obvious now, the reason is that Iran is part of OPEC, And that if oil start to increase, so then obvious what is going to happen is that the we will also face that there will be inflation will go up, and when inflation is going up, then the central bank or Bank of Namibia will start now to tag, you know, to cap the inflation, and to cap the inflation is only by increasing the repo rate, and that is not a good thing. But however, if things stay as it currently, mm-hmm. I would advise you to buy now. Mm-hmm. So because the money is cheaper, I would advise you to buy your house, advise you to buy your BMW. Mm-hmm. So because the money is cheaper and you will be able to afford the installment.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Joseph. However, maybe what are your last words that you would just like to say before we close off our interview?
As I said from the beginning, that I expect that the Bank of Namibia will reduce the repo rate. Will not reduce the repo rate. It will remain unchanged.
Okay.
So, and what is very important is that what I always caution the people is that when the repo rate is unchanged, mm-hmm. so it doesn't mean that you need to take more debt now. So because you are actually maintaining your debt at a current level, and at current level, that installment is nothing changed in your income and expenditure. So it is better for now for you to start to save, mm-hmm. if you can.
Okay.
So especially like now where we have a very volatile market and geopolitics and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that also, as I said, that it is also good that especially when it comes to the business, mm-hmm. communities, especially like SMEs, if they can, mm-hmm. it's actually a good time for them also to get credit extension so that they can start to expand the business.
Uh-huh.
So, but what I think is that let us also watch or come up or having the attitude of watch and see. Especially what is happening in the market now, especially the unrest between Russia and the Ukraine and also Israel and Iran.
Mm-hmm.
So and obviously now we will start to see that okay, where the economy is actually leading us. So because if this kind of wars continue, so then obviously we have to start to save. So because we don't know what will happen, because whatever happened in Middle East, it can also affect Namibia economy, and obvious who is going to pay the price, mm-hmm. is the householders.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Joseph. Have a nice day.
Okay, thank you, Fatima.
There you heard it from economic analyst Joseph Kefasrihama, just anticipating also that the repo rate will remain at 6.75%. And of course, he explained that the inflation has decreased from 3.6% in April to 3.5%, giving Bond or Bank of Namibia the opportunity to maintain the current repo rate. And he also pointed out several factors influencing this decision of today, including a decline in transportation cost and international also reserves. Now, on that again, we another financial advisor, Loise Ipinge, shared a similar expectation regarding the repo rate, predicting it will remain at 6.75% to avoid further reduction or rather increases. We might take a listen to all this further.
When we are speaking of repo rate, what are we really referring to in your own understanding?
Okay, so the repo rate in basic terms is just to say that, you know, money is printed, né, by the government or by the country. And our banks, they generally borrow from the Bank of Namibia. So the Bank of Namibia is like the main bank that borrows to every bank so that the banks can then borrow to us. Mm-hmm. So the rate at which the bank borrows its money to the bank in terms of interest that they need to receive from the bank is what they call the repo rate. So it's basically the interest rate that the Bank of Namibia charges the commercial banks.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Again, in your own view, do you think this repo rate is going to be standing at the same percentage, or probably maybe they are going to increase or decrease it?
I mean, so far the reason for the decrease was to, you know, get the country economic growth for people to start doing more activities as far as the economy is concerned. That's the main reason they've been reducing, which has been great, right? But they also have to just make sure that they are not reducing too much, or it may be at a higher pace, especially compared to other economies like South Africa, which we are really, really highly connected to. So for me, I think they potentially will keep it where it is instead of reducing it further. And I don't think they would want to increase it at this point, because the main goal at this point is to get the economy back up again, since, you know, our economy has not really been great in the past few years. Mm-hmm. So the reason for the reduction so far has been to improve that. But I just don't think, they will most likely reduce it again. I mean, South Africa did reduce theirs, in their last meeting. But theirs is still sitting at 7.25, I think, at this point. So, they are trying to at least keep up with that one, so that we are not too far apart. I am not sure. We still have to find out today when it comes out. But I think for me, yeah, my guess is that they will keep it at 6.25, yeah.
Okay. When we are looking at the repo rate now, what factors within our economy of Namibia, how does or of South Africa, how are they likely to influence the decision?
Yeah. Because essentially, in terms of, you have to understand was the banks, right? The country has to make money, and it's making money through the banks, and the banks are making money through the people, right? Mm-hmm. Then the people, the only way we really will be motivated to go borrow is if the interest rates are a little bit low, mm-hmm. right? So that we can have more economy and businesses can start going up, so that we can start importing again, because generally businesses are the ones that import things from different countries and stuff like that. So all these things are interconnected. So I would say that because of all those likely factors of the different economies that affect in terms of us trading with them, we also have to think about international markets like the US and all the stuff that is happening right now. But what I do love, especially with our president so far, she's been mostly encouraging trade within Africa, trade within the Southern African market. So that really is great, considering that South Africa is also reducing its repo rate. So it also means they are kind of doing the same thing. But yeah, those are the main things that are affecting is how our relationship with trade is happening with different countries, mm-hmm. and how are we actively encouraged as consumers to increase our economic activities, which is usually meaning how are we borrowing to do business in general terms? And are we encouraged to do so? So the repo rate is generally increased or decreased to help us now, either to encourage us or to discourage us a little bit in terms of borrowing to do business. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you have mentioned of us trading with other countries. So I want to know, there are things that were like COVID-19. I felt like those things have affected the way money was. I felt like most of things were expensive during that time. So
yeah.
Does these things like now this world war things and war, do they affect the reparation rate?
No, they affect the decision that the monetary committee makes in terms of how they manage the repo rate.
Okay.
Mainly because of the trade relationships we have with the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. Because trade relationship just means that, am I going to buy something from another person at a higher price or at a lower price? Right. Mm-hmm. And that would usually just depend on the relationship you have. If for example, a war happens in a country where we usually used to get things, mm-hmm. and now that impacts us getting those things, because most likely transport is going to be difficult because there's war and stuff like that. So most likely we'll need to maybe change in terms of where we get that item to go somewhere else. And maybe where we go somewhere else is more expensive than where we used to buy it. So almost those things affect, but it also depends on how much do we depend on wherever what is happening there. Mm-hmm. So, and I think for me, that like I imported, the problem we have, especially with us Namibia, or at least in Africa in general, is that we are relying too much in Europe for a lot of things in terms of us. We are not producing the things ourselves, which mm-hmm. is a major, major problem, which then means that if anything happens in other countries, then it also affects us in some way, shape or form, right? So it doesn't directly say that the repo rate, if a war happens and the repo rate will increase, but it does mean that the people that are managing the repo rate, they do have to think about it depending on how much trade we are doing with that specific country. Mm-hmm. So I think to answer the question, then is just to say that what type of trade relationship do we have with the rest of the world and what is happening in those areas. Mm-hmm.
Looking from your own perspective, how should consumers prepare in your own general words, or maybe as a person, as an individual, what are the good times for a person to take out loans, especially for me, maybe to buy my house or buy a car?
I mean, obviously, the best time to take out any loan is when the repo rate is at its lowest, mm-hmm. right? Because it means that you are charged at the cheapest rate, but it also only means that you are charged at a cheaper rate if you took out a variable interest type of loan, right? Mm-hmm. So the bank, and I think that's where maybe us Namibians are a little bit not given the information by the banks, mm-hmm. is that you do have the option to choose if you want a variable rate loan or you want a fixed rate loan, right? Mm-hmm. Variable means just whenever the repo rate changes, then it means your loan also changes with it. If it reduces, your interest rate is reducing. If it increases, your interest rate is increasing, mm-hmm. Which then means that your installment is also either increasing or reducing, right? Mm-hmm. And it's good for you if the repo rate is low, mm-hmm. right? But it's really bad for you if the repo rate is high. Because then it means that all of a sudden you used to pay an installment of maybe 6,000, now it has gone up if the repo rate also goes up.
Okay.
So I would say, try. Maybe the best thing to do, honestly, you do have to think about it, that for maybe home loans, things that are really long term, mm-hmm. It's probably better you take a fixed one. It might give you a higher installment mm-hmm. at the beginning,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But it also means that when the repo rate falls, you are actually paying more on your home loan. Mm-hmm. So you are not affected at all. Mm-hmm. But for loans that are maybe 5 years, 2 years, 3 years, mm-hmm. Those ones you can choose variable because, you know, you can just see how the repo rate is and okay, it will most likely be at that rate for that period of time that you took out the loan for, yeah.
Yeah, very true. Okay, so mm-hmm. Before we close off our interview, maybe what are your last words that you just like to share with us regarding the repo rate?
For me, I'm a consumer financial person, right? So I'm more about the consumer. So I would say obviously keep up with that information so that you can keep our financial institutions accountable, right? Understand these things, but also understand the repo rate is not too as important as the prime rate. The prime rate is the rate that the Bank of Namibia expects the bank to kind of standardize their rates in. Mm-hmm. So usually when you get your if you request for your interest rate from the bank, they will tell you that they are giving you a little bit this much higher than the prime rate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Currently, the prime rate is at 10.5, or they are giving you it a little bit lower than the prime rate. So those are some of the things you maybe need to understand as you take out loans. Also, do some sort of comparisons. Don't just go to one specific bank. Maybe get two or three quotations from different banks so that you can get a competitive rate. So just kind of know these things about variable, fixed, what are the advantages, what are the disadvantages. And let's just ensure that when we take out loans, we can actually afford them. Yeah, that would be, yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Loise Ipinge.
You are welcome. Thank you so much for having me. And I hope I've given information that is valuable.
Thank you very much.
All right, there you had it. The time is 2 minutes in the off, 7 o'clock, and this early morning scoop. Of course, there you had it from Loise Ipinge, financial advisor, also just predicting the very same thing, that of course the repo rate will remain the same at 6.75 on when, of course. But then, however, we are expecting that announcement later on today. Do not miss the announcement. Well, we might take a lesson to the next item. All right, to move on to the next item, the eSIM technology is set to replace traditional physical SIM globally. A local telecommunication provider has noted that the adoption of eSIM will now take place gradually. Now, the mobile telecommunication company, a senior data executive, Nadine Dennis Adid Mora, will now be joining us to elaborate on this particular topic. A very good morning to you, Ms. Demora, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Good morning, Louise. How are you?
We're doing great. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Just before we dive in, like, could you please also just explain to us what eSIM means and how they maybe transition to this technology will occur?
Okay, so basically an eSIM is what is known as an embedded SIM card. So outside of your traditional physical SIM card that we all are using now to insert into our device, this is a digital SIM card which is directly built into our smartphones, some smartwatches and tablets and other IoT devices that's coming out. Yes. And so it's basically embedded into the device hardware. So this happens at manufacturing level. And a lot of phones, smartwatches, IoT devices that are being rolled out are eSIM only. So they don't anymore come with traditional SIM slot for you to enter the physical chip.
I want us to understand also the difference between the physical SIM cards and, of course, the eSIM itself. How impactful eSIM technology will be to us or, yes, to everyone actually in the country?
Okay, so both the physical and the eSIM works the same. You'd still be able to make calls on an eSIM.
Okay.
You'll still be able to send SMS. You'll be able to purchase, for example, like your Super Awe or any Awe products. So your profile still remains the same. The technology just changes. You don't need the physical SIM card anymore. Now you'll just be using the eSIM that is embedded into your phone. So ideally what you need to first do is to check if your phone is eSIM compatible, which in today's market, a lot of phones that are being manufactured is embedded with an eSIM. And then like I just mentioned earlier, a lot of them also do not come with the physical SIM slots anymore. So nothing really changes in terms of the services that you get on the eSIM.
All right.
It's still the same.
Okay. Yeah, maybe other countries around the world that are perhaps maybe using the eSIM technology already. And if so, how are they maybe progressing with this transition?
So they are quite a few years ahead of us. If you look at the US market and some Asian countries, they are actually rolling out smartphones that are just eSIM. So you can no longer use a physical SIM card. That's why it was important for NTC to bring the technology to the Namibian market. So we can also be digitally first within the country. Also to cater not only for the customers that are coming into the country that have eSIM only devices, but also our own customers that maybe travel and purchase these devices and that are looking for eSIMs. Additionally to this, you will know that a lot of us and a lot of our local customers also carry smartwatches. So currently, when you go to the gym, for example, or you go jogging, or you go for a run, in order for you to use your smartwatch, your phone needs to be in the range. But with eSIM, Once it's introduced to the market, you will now be able to leave your phone at home and still go and jog, go to the gym and receive calls with just your smartwatch.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I understand that most of us, we have the 3G and 4G, and there is also that 5G. Now, with eSIM, would it also accommodate that?
Yes. Okay. So currently, on your mobile network, you can move from your 3G to a 4G network. A lot of us are connected to 4G.
Yeah.
And as Namibia prepares for a wider 5G rollout, eSIMs will simplify the upgrade process as well.
Mm-hmm.
And also many 5G ready devices already support eSIM technology, meaning that you will not change your SIM card to move onto faster next generation networks, not just within Namibia, but even if you are a customer that frequently travels to countries where 5G has already been rolled out.
We have different apps, you know, so the banking app and all that. How is that also going to work with the eSIM?
Yeah, so it works the same as the physical SIM. So your banking apps are linked to your MSISDN, which is your cell phone number, right?
Mm-hmm.
So once we introduce eSIM and you swap to an eSIM, upgrade to an eSIM, you still essentially are keeping your number. So when you receive your banking OTPs, it will still come through to your device because you still have your MSISDN. It's just the technology that's changing. The only thing that changes when it comes to with your mobile app is that I know, like, for example, with FNB, if you are changing phones, then you need to change that. You need to, on the website, also go and change that you are no longer using this device and that you are moving now to a new device. But the worry here is that will you still be able to receive your OTPs?
Okay.
Yes. Just like to encourage the Namibian public to look at eSIM as more than a product, because it's part of us building a more connected, secure and convenient Namibia. And I just want to encourage the listeners to embrace the shift with an open mind, knowing that all innovation that we introduce is designed to make their mobile experience better. And I know that change can be overwhelming. I mean, we have been using physical SIM cards for so many years, but they are not alone. And we are here to support. Our call center is there. Our advisors at the store is there to make the process simple and stress-free.
Thank you so much, Ms. Demora, for having us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
Okay.
All right, it's 10 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. And, of course, there you heard it from Ms. Demora, whereas she mentioned a lot of things. She mentioned that, like, the SIM, the physical SIM card, and, of course, the eSIM, it works more similar. It's more the same. We're not going to lose anything. So it's more of the same. However, the other one is just the easiest one because you don't have to insert the SIM card. And, of course, it just worked automatically. Like that, and then you can connect. You're not going to lose any app. What she highlighted. Now, to move on to the next item is that the European Union has been granted a permanent observer seat in the African Union summit. Now, this allows the EU to listen in on discussion and, of course, participate in planning and developmental programs. And, of course, on this, my colleague David Shombe engaged with Lifa Nombanda, economist, who discussed on the implication of the EU seats in the African Union, including the advantages and challenges that will or thus this development might bring. We might take a listen.
Yes, we are looking at economic development. Today, we are going to look at business development, we are going to look at continental affairs, and we are going to analyze our institutions if they are in line with what the continent is also asking to do. Today, we're going to look at the African Union. It was indicated that since 2012, African Union has officially granted European Union a seat in African continental affairs. When it's holding its meetings, you have somebody from European Union, you have official from European Union. They are also there just to observe, but this has influence in our international economic development. But for us to unpack this, I got into the conversation with those who understand economics and also those who can assist us to unpack this. I got into the conversation with Lifa Nombanda, who's an economist, and is going to engage us this morning. Lifa, good morning, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop. How are you doing?
Good morning, sir. Thank you. Thank you for hosting me. I'm doing very well.
Yes. Let us look at continental affairs. As an economist, what do you think is the aim of African Union, which it has been for a long time granting EU a seat in African Union Commission affairs? Or when it's holding its meeting, you have somebody from EU who is observing, who is watching, and also maybe advising, although not given an opportunity to vote in those activities.
Well, having the EU observer status is an interesting development. It also gives the EU an opportunity to have an insight on our deliberations, on our plans.
Yeah.
And exactly what it is that we are trying to do as Africa, mm-hmm. in terms of our development. It's also critical that we look at the development of Africa in the last 60 years,
yeah.
prior to the formation of the EU,
mm-hmm.
and how Africa has actually developed within that last 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
The impact of having the EU as an observer is quite a positive development. However, we need to also realize that the EU has also played a major role in the foreign direct investments of African states.
Yeah.
And because of this, it can actually have, to a great extent, influence
mm-hmm.
on exactly how Africa focuses on the development of each member state within Africa,
mm-hmm.
and exactly what African governments need to prioritize.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a catch-22 in the sense that you have an organization that's observing
mm-hmm.
as an observer on the deliberations, but this is the same organization which has got member states that are actually involved in foreign direct investment.
Mm-hmm.
So one has to look at it from an objective point of view and see whether it is positive or not, which to some extent it is, but can also lead to a lot of influential decisions being made.
Mm-hmm.
Kapena we paru epena ombiriha ivule po ndando za Shoprite. Ela rakano jitu oku kupa o ndando zilipevi. Mipumbi wa iheto upumga esiku kehe. Tapeka po keji imbalizo soka ontirigani o right brand golden. Koduro mirangwa ndato na heri no senda o mirangwa weno hui kehe. Osho o keji ndano zusera we pungu wa topsko super maze. Koduro mirangwa hamano no hui no senda mirangwa weno hui adhike. Tindo kufuta ashivuli sepo ndando zo Shoprite prize. Ziriko sigo mbali na gari gayuni nuvo. Oko Shoprite aku. Okay.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a catch-22 in the sense that you have an organization that's observing
mm-hmm.
as an observer on the deliberations, but this is the same organization which has got member states that are actually involved in foreign direct investment.
Mm-hmm.
So one has to look at it from an objective point of view and see whether it is positive or not, which to some extent it is, but can also lead to a lot of influential decisions being made
mm-hmm.
Through the foreign direct investment that the EU presents in Africa.
Mm-hmm. So it you are saying it gives EU advantage to have pre-insight on African continental developmental agendas compared to other institutions, either from the US or from the Asian, continent.
Yes. Yes. Well, you look at the history of Europe and Africa.
Mm.
African countries were colonized by European states,
mm-hmm.
And it's unavoidable that the EU will have an interest in the affairs of Africa, compared to, for instance, Asia, that China, and you're looking at the United States. Mm-hmm. So the EU will most definitely play a critical role in terms of shaping how Africa develops.
Mm-hmm.
And this comes through the foreign direct investments, which, like I said, can really be quite a catch-22, because, and then the EU can then dictate exactly what should be prioritized and what should not be prioritized.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Lifa, while we are there, Africa have, you know, as a continent through African Union, tried for a very long time to unite the continent in terms of, you know, social movement, in terms of, you know, trade and also, economic diplomacy, to say, particularly when you are looking at the African continental free trade area. But, looking at the presence of EU, do you think the unity of Africa is a threat to external institutions like EU?
Well, the African Free Trade, which was established in 2018, basically is there because we are trying to synergize and see how we as Africans are able to trade amongst ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing.
Mm.
Secondly, we need to be able to have value addition for our products.
Yeah.
Not just for export to the EU or to the Americas, but within our own selves.
Yeah.
So it does present a bit of a challenge for the EU, which obviously has a lot of vested interest in Africa.
Mm.
We can give an example. For instance, we look at our the exports that are going into the EU, which are minerals, for example.
Yeah.
The EU has benefited quite immensely from our mineral exports.
Mm.
And if the AFTA is able then to really synergize and to organize itself in a manner that really benefits African produce,
mm-hmm.
for the benefit of the people, it will present quite an interesting challenge for the EU.
Mm-hmm.
And just to add as well, you know, it's interesting because China has actually now cut off tariffs for Africa.
Yeah.
They've actually brought zero tariffs. So that's quite an interesting situation. And it just shows you how critical African exports are, not just to the EU,
mm-hmm.
but just to the global village itself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at now with the tariff hikes from the United States, that's also going to affect a lot of AGOA mm-hmm. states,
mm-hmm.
Which are part of the free trade agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So it does present an interesting challenge. And I think the EU is watching this quite keenly,
mm-hmm.
and most likely want to see how Africa is going to synergize and how African states
mm-hmm.
are going to try and find ways and means to really bring not just value addition to products that they trade amongst themselves, but to the EU as well.
Yes. While we are there, Lifa, let us look at issues of trade diplomacy. Africa have been, you know, caught between two fighting bulls, the West and, you know, the Eastern part, particularly the U.S. And China, to say. But as an economist or somebody who is, you know, in area of, you know, economic analysis and also looking at the position of Africa now, which side is very strategic to take, or do we need to play with both of them? Because we tried the West for a very long time, and it seems like we are still trading in raw materials. Even in Namibia, we still do not do anything to our uranium, although we are the third largest producer of uranium in the world. Which side is strategically good for us to take, or we need to have them both on the table?
Well, I think it's very important to look at our own interests.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we benefiting the most?
Okay.
Which of the two nations has really played a critical role, not just in helping developing Africa, but in also in terms of our minerals, in terms of our produce, which country has really taken an interest?
Mm-hmm.
And that has been China.
Mm-hmm.
China has played a very critical role
mm-hmm.
in the development of Africa. And it has actually made a lot of investments in the African continent.
Mm-hmm.
It's only recently now, in the last probably 20 years or 20, 15 years, that the Americans have now really started taking an interest in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But the critical thing that we must look at is our own interests, mm-hmm. and which of the two nations has the interest at heart,
mm-hmm.
for Africa, and how do we benefit from both nations.
Mm-hmm.
So one cannot really say you should take the American side or you should take the Chinese side. It then becomes critical for us to sit down, look at the strategic position that we're going through, and see which is the best alternative to go.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we are faced with what we call the tariff wars, like you said, between China and the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes very, very difficult now for Africa to really look at which partner to work with.
Yeah.
However, China has made a very big strategic move by cutting zero tariffs, and that serves our interest.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So one would then say that China would most likely be the best alternative going forward at the present moment.
Mm-hmm. Lastly, Lifa, maybe your advice, especially to I want to bring it to Namibia senior diplomats or even leaders who find themselves in this can be trade forum, it can be economic summits. What are some of the three key things that we need to prioritize in international affairs, especially as Namibia at this point in time?
Okay, so I think it's important that as Namibia we need to look at our state of economy.
Mm-hmm.
We are heavily reliant on mining.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing. And we need to get value addition for our minerals. That for me is quite critical.
Okay.
I mean, since colonial times, and this is the history of our continent, since colonial times, we have been exporting our minerals in raw form.
Yeah.
And we have not been getting the value that is really necessary for the minerals that are rightfully ours, as a continent and as a nation.
Mm-hmm.
So value addition to our minerals is critical. That's the first point that I want to bring up across.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is that we need to also work on local skills development of the youth, mm-hmm. of the country.
Okay.
If we look at the current situation, even with our local mines, But most of the top executives are not local Namibians.
Mm-hmm.
It's run by foreigners. And what this shows is that we are lacking in terms of the intellectual capacity to be able to handle our affairs in a manner that can really bring about benefits economically and socially as well,
mm-hmm.
To the country. So I think critical skills development is the second thing that we really need to prioritize. The third thing as well is that entrepreneurship is a big thing. I think it's important that the government focuses on the bringing up of entrepreneurship. We need venture capital for young entrepreneurs to be able to start up their own ventures,
mm-hmm.
and be able to bring value not just to the growth of the Namibian economy, but also on the global village.
Mm-hmm.
We really need to start working on that. So I would really urge that the government must really start focusing on entrepreneurship and how we can also have venture capital, because we don't have venture capital. For instance, if you look at Namibia, the only visible institution that we have is the Development Bank of Namibia.
Yeah.
Which offers up capital for startups and for young entrepreneurs.
Mm.
And what that does is that although the businesses are then able to be started up, we also need entrepreneurs that can play on the global scale as well,
mm-hmm.
and can contribute as well to the national fiscus,
mm-hmm.
of the country and the development of not just SADC, but also the AU as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Entire African continent. Yeah.
Yes, Lifa Nombanda, thank you very much for joining us this morning, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you.
All right, cool.
Pleasure. Bye-bye.
All right. This is a ShopRite live read. Get all your essential products for just 99 Namibian dollars only at USAFE. That include 1 kilogram of rice king and 1 kilogram of top score, that is Bokomo super maize meal. 1 kilogram of bag of sugar king, or whether white or brown sugar. And 750 milliliter of Rite brand sunflower seed oil. And of course, you can get 500 grams of pasta Polana or pasta king. And of course, only, or rather, you can just pay just 99 Namibian dollars only up to Sunday, the 22nd of June, 2025. You save. Yes, we all save at You Save.
Omutiha kutekirwa kaguna ii matina omjo. Chikao shafasana nana longe shifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongotisa mwene. Anange shifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayakudo nirandito mwa yoe yonge shifa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengera selma konara heta tuimu. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano o niyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, it's 29 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock. Thank you so much for staying tuned today and on our today's edition, that is Early Morning Scoop. Thank you so much. And, of course, that marks our today's episode or today's updates. Thank you so much. And I would also love to rather hand over to my colleague, Tate Michael Shaveri. And do not forget to connect with us again to our beautiful platform that is Eagle FM Namibia. You find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. And of course, we have the WhatsApp channel that is Eagle FM Media House. Please do not forget to subscribe and then be able to catch up on our daily news update that we always give, update there, especially on economic updates. And of course, you can catch up on the newspaper alerts that we always release our newspaper, our e-paper there. That is the Villager newspaper. All rather, you can send through your number to 081-200-4144. That's the number you need to save so that you can at least send through your detail, and then you can be getting the newspaper every day it's released. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And from me, Loisa Shimi, it's a good day. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Omutiha kutekirwa kaguna ii matina omjo. Chikao shafasana nana longe shifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongotisa mwene. Anange shifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayakudo nirandito mwa yoe yonge shifa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengera selma konara heta tuimu. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano o niyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build. Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.